Moncrief on News Talk.
Scouting in Ireland has had more than its share of difficulties, scandals at board level, along with hundreds of allegations of sexual abuse. Yet the organisation is still there. It has a waiting list to join, and it's now trying to present itself as an antidote to the online poison that so many boys and girls are subjected to. Sean Sheehan is CEO of Scouting Ireland. Good afternoon, Sean.
Good afternoon, Sean.
If somebody joins a scout troop, what age can you join a scout troop, first off?
You can join from age 6.
Yeah.
We have several bands of age groups, Sean. So 6 to 8 would be our beavers.
Yeah.
9 to 11 is cubs. You then move to scouts from 12 to 15. 15 to 17 is ventures. And then from 18 to 25, we call them rovers.
Okay. And after 25, you kind of age out, do you?
Well, you become an adult scouter.
Yeah.
And a lot of people over 25 become involved then as leaders and additional volunteers in supporting the scouting movement in moving forward.
Okay. And so when you go in at 6, what kind of things would you be doing?
Well, all the early stuff in terms of outdoors, an awful lot of activities outdoors, a level of that indoors as well. You'd be starting to learn some of the adventure skills. So you start to think about preparing yourself for camping, preparing yourself for pioneering, preparing yourself for orienteering. We also give them an element of things like emergencies. So starting to get an early sense of the skills and capabilities that they will need to go forward in life.
Okay, yeah. So what kind of skills?
Well, you think about working with others, so collaboration. You think about a level of endurance and test. You think about working with others and starting to respect others. So one of the things that every scout does when they first join is what we call their scouting promise. And that's a commitment to help each other, to support each other, to help their community, work within their community. And that's then driven by a set of values and principles. And every scouter, there's 60 million scouters over the world in 180 countries, and everyone makes the same promise and everyone takes the same obedience to the scout law. And that's around respect. It's around tolerance. It's around trust. It's around helping others. It's around helping to create a sustainable and better world.
Yeah. Okay. And so they learn kind of camping skills when they go in at 6. And then is the life of someone in the Scouts, does it really surround going on camping and going outdoors and those kinds of things?
It certainly is a core aspect of it, Sean. But we try to make sure that it's a little bit more than that. So there's a lot of problem solving. There's a lot of critical thinking. There's a lot of risk management. As you develop from 6, 7, 8 all the way through to that young adult scouter at 18 and 19, you're developing skills all the time, and you're developing your exploration of those skills, and you're developing the level of adventure. So there's a competency that comes with those skills as you go through the various age bands, and you develop then those capabilities and competencies. And in our view, they are skills for life. I don't know of any other organisation, Sean, that will prepare any youth for life in terms of a personal development, but also in terms of their professional life.
Okay, what kinds of skills?
So resilience, you think about that, and you think about the importance.
That's not a skill.
Well, it is a skill in that you have to learn and you have to develop it and you have to be tested along the way. Your adventure skills in terms of pioneering, so how to build things and develop things. You think about orienteering, how to read a map and how to protect yourself. How to survive outdoors, how to respect the outdoors. Sustainability and environment are a core part of our program and a core part of their learning skills as well. So there's a very broad range of skills and a very broad range of challenges that they're set that are age dependent, that will develop those skills, develop those capabilities, develop the competencies and make them fit for purpose, fit for life. And in our view, create future leaders.
You do have a waiting list?
We do.
Right now?
We have a 10,000 on our waiting list. And most of the reason for that is down to funding, Sean. We don't have the financial capacity to meet demand.
Yeah. And where does the funding predominantly come from?
Well, predominant funding, 70% of our funding is from members. We have to charge a membership fee, and that's one of our biggest challenges. We do get a government contribution. We're very grateful for that government contribution. But if I break that down into the 3.5 million volunteer hours that my volunteers give every year to scouting, to develop young children, to develop them as future leaders, that works out at 40 cents an hour, Sean. So we do believe that a fairer state contribution would deliver you know, more services, a broader Scouting Ireland capability and abilities, and we'd be able to start to reach more communities, because that membership fee starts to become unaffordable in certain communities. And I think that's a shame for all of those kids that miss out.
From government's point of view, can you make a case to them and say, if you give us X amount of money, are you able to tell them, should you tell them, how much of that money will be used to settle historic sex abuse cases?
Well, so that's a very simple answer, Sean. None of the government funds in any way would go towards settling historical abuse.
Okay.
That's a commitment we have made. It is our responsibility and it is our obligation to support every survivor of historical abuse, and we will deliver that in a sympathetic, empathetic and appropriate manner. We will be survivor-led and trauma-informed at all times.
Okay, so your members are paying for those court cases?
At this point in time, absolutely yes.
Yeah. How many places are you in around the country?
So we're in 426 communities all over the island. We're a 32-county, all-Ireland organisation, and we have 40,000 members at this point in time and 10,000 volunteers, Sean.
Yeah. And in terms of the kind of experience most young people have, they're on their screens, they see a lot of toxic stuff. That, like, do you have a policy, say, for instance, in regard to phones and screens in general?
We certainly do. And again, that would be very age dependent and indeed very much run and led at a local level by each scout group. But we very much have the protection of all youth within our responsibility at the core of what we do, protecting and respecting everybody is a core of what we do. So we do have a guidance policy in respect to phones. And I think the good thing about scouting, in our views, is, you know, there's no home comforts, there's no screen time, there's no phones, there is excitement, there's fun, there's outdoors, there's learning through action and learning through those development of your skills and capabilities. And it's working and respecting each other and collaborating as you do it.
Oh, so there's no phones, basically.
No phones.
Yeah. Okay. And do the teenagers push back against that?
They do, of course. And I suppose that's why you have to have that local solution, Sean, where, you know, if you are on a camp and you're on a camp for 4 or 5 days, parents get a little nervous. Some of the kids might get a little nervous. So we make sure that those phones can be available from time to time in a protected manner to allow them to engage with their parents if that's appropriate or if that's indeed what they want. You will find that a lot of children and a lot of kids don't want their phones. Once after the first day passes, they're enjoying themselves so much, they don't look for their phones.
Yeah. What's the proportion between boys and girls now?
Yeah, so in scouting in Europe, it's 2/3 to 1/3. And scouting in Ireland, it's around 50-50 at this point in time.
Okay, well, that's where you want it to be.
It's 100% where we want it to be.
Yeah. And when they go camping, where do they go? And how onerous is that? Because I read that, like, 11-year-olds have to go on long hikes and
so
that
again,
kind of stuff.
So very much age-dependent to answer that question. But, you know, once you get into those older groups and you're into scouts at 12 to 15, like, they go on scout and camp trips all over the world. There's scouts at this point in time all over the UK. There's scouts in Portugal at this point in time. There's the 16th World Mute, which is 7,500 rovers, scouts from all over the world, 117 countries in Portugal. Ireland has a team there involved in that at this point in time. So they get to travel the world in a global citizenship opportunity and a global citizenship engagement in terms of intercultural time.
And is that like a competition or something?
It is. It's not a competition per se, and that we try to stay away from competition.
Okay.
It's very much a gathering of young people to help support a peaceful and sustainable world. And it's very much around that intercultural aspect. So it's developing them to be better people, better citizens, not just at a local level, but at a global level.
Yeah. And in terms of getting them to be, in the Irish context, getting them to be better citizens, what kind of specific things do you do in regard to that?
So again, your leaders become very important in that. The leaders are very much a role model. So, you know, we'd be very much led by our scouting method. So we're not looking to direct. We're looking to engage. We're looking to collaborate. We're looking to be a role model in respect to their development. So very much the leaders are trained in that respect, Sean, trained to make sure that we understand and can look for where are the challenges in society and how can we develop our program to support and develop that. So if you think about radicalization, that's a very much new dimension that we've included in our training to try and make sure our leaders can play that broader role, not just in development of that kid, but a broader societal role as well.
Yeah. Okay. So it's specifically in terms of radicalization. what do you do about it?
Well, it's just training. It's awareness. It's what to look for. And it's giving them some prompts. It's giving them some thoughts. And it's making sure that if they are or do observe something and they're a little bit concerned about that, then it's making sure our welfare team and our safeguarding team are available to them to work that through, talk that through, and then see is there something there that we should deal with the appropriate authorities.
Okay. And would you inform the parents in that kind of instance?
Again, it would all depend on the circumstances, Sean, in terms of what's actually visible, what it is we believe we have identified, and we work from there in terms of the parents. But of course, the parents are core to everything we do. And what you will find in scouting is a lot of the parents are the volunteers.
Yeah. Now, I imagine if, you know, your son, your 15-year-old son was an incel or something, you'd want to know that.
I would imagine you would.
Yeah. So it would be par for the course if you kind of notice something like that you would inform the
100%,
parents.
100%. Parents are critical. Our safeguarding team have the skills and the capabilities. Our welfare team have the skills and the capabilities to engage parents at all age groups on the appropriate matter.
And so in those kind of instances, is there something specific the scouts can do about it with that person, or you have to refer
to authorities after that?
Yeah.
Our job is to try and build a better world, build a sustainable, better Ireland, create that value in society, evidence that value in society. And as I said before, it's around creating future leaders. I don't believe there's any organisation, Sean, that develops youth the way that we do and gives them the skills and capabilities for life.
Sean, thanks very much for coming into us today. That was Sean Sheehan there, CEO of Scouting Ireland.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.